Good evening. This is Susan Gingrich, the herb lady. We're in beautiful southern Ohio with rain and cold again. And tonight we have Thomas Easley with us. Hi, Thomas.
Hi, I'm in beautiful Alabama, and it's raining and warm here.
Yeah, you get the warm. Lucky you. Well, tonight for a topic, Thomas and I have decided to try to pare down one of our favorite topics, the intestinal health. And it's something that herbalists tend to do. We like to do bathroom talk, you know, and discuss how we eliminate and so forth. It is one of my favorite systems to talk about because it just affects everything. Thomas said when I said let's do intestines, he said, well, do we have 5 or 6 hours to do it? So there's lots to talk about.
Yes, there is.
Where shall we start, Thomas?
Let us start with bowel movements.
Bowel movements themselves, huh? You want to get right in there into the nitty-gritty and discuss what they should look like?
Well, let's go ahead and get into the crap.
Okay, go for it.
The body's designed for 1 meal in to push the next meal out. Your average American eats 3 meals a day, so you have 3 bowel movements a day. Most people I work with are good to get 1 bowel movement a day, which means that every week you've got 14 meals sitting in your gut, rotting and fermenting at 98 degrees. That is what causes the majority of inflammation in the body, and inflammation is what causes the majority of American health problems.
It is in a nutshell.
Yeah, in a nutshell, basically, that's what's going on with America. We're full of it.
Right up to our ears.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
So the average bowel movement should be 12 to 18 inches long. It should be around 1 inch in diameter, light brown in color, and have a slight S-shaped curve at the top if you're eating enough fiber. It sinks if you're a meat eater, floats if you eat lots of fruits and vegetables.
Let me see, and what was it Frank Nisi said the other night about that? It should not float, he said. If it floats, you have too much fat in your system.
Unless you're a huge meat eater. Unless you're a huge fiber eater. Now, if you eat 35 to 40 grams of fiber a day, it's going to float.
Because it is.
Yeah, most people don't.
Mm-hmm. I had a man come in one time, and he said he sat down here, and when I asked him how many bowel movements he had per day, he said, "Oh gosh," he said, "maybe once a month if I'm lucky."
Yeah.
And I said to him, "Doesn't that worry you?" He said, "No, I just figured my body was very efficient and used up everything that came in."
I guess the worst I ever worked with was a lady that had a average about once every 45 days.
Whoa!
And she had been anorexic or bulimic when she was young and just totally messed up her intestinal system, and then had done stimulant laxatives for years, and basically her colon was almost dead. I mean, it took 45 days to build up an electrical charge, which is what causes the colon to create peristolic action. There's an ionic charge that builds up in the colon, and when it builds that charge up, it stimulates peristolic action. And what stimulative laxatives do is they discharge that energy before it gets fully built up, which is why I'm against stimulant laxatives, because they tend to lower the overall energy of the colon muscle down.
Well, let's talk about then what would be a good laxative to begin with if you are constipated, which would be anyone who's having less than 3 to 4 bowel movements a day,
most
of America. I like to start with magnesium, personally.
Magnesium, to me, is the safest, most long-term solution to colon health.
What it does is to provide the relaxation to the muscles. Any place in the body where there's a squeeze and a release, you have calcium for the squeeze and magnesium for the release. So this is important for heart health as well. Every time the heart beats, calcium is used in the squeeze. And I've heard Dr. Richardson say that 75% of heart attacks are a squeeze that did not release.
Right.
So magnesium for everybody as an extra little vitamin supplement on a daily basis is not a bad idea at all. It works the same way in the peristaltic motion. It allows for the release. And a lot of our constipation has to do with a squeeze that just holds there for days and days and days.
To mention that magnesium citrate, the citrate actually goes into the Krebs cycle and increases the energy of that muscle and that ion transfer there. So not only does it cause that relaxation, which causes peristaltic action, but it helps that muscle build up charge faster, which creates a more natural peristolic action.
Yeah. And of course, we've heard of or used milk of magnesia for bowels forever. And I want to mention right here that women need more magnesium than men, especially just before your period. And a lot of women have experienced a certain constipation around their monthly cycle as well. And I have found over the years that magnesium in extra doses will help with that, more than the magnesium in your calcium-magnesium combination, if you're taking one. Women need more.
That's something I'd like to bring up. Most calcium-magnesium combinations are two-part calcium to one-part magnesium. And that's for absorption of the calcium. I think that because magnesium is the first mineral used up in alkalinizing the body and buffering the acids that we get too much of, I believe it should be a 2 or 3 to 1 magnesium to calcium ratio.
Yeah, I agree. So you take extra magnesium with your calcium magnesium supplement.
Absolutely.
And my husband takes 4 to 5 a day. I take an extra 2 or 3.
Yeah, and we know that magnesium works. I mean, have you ever heard of Epsom salts not working? That's magnesium sulfate.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess probably the second safest, and what I like to add on to magnesium occasionally, is vitamin C.
Okay.
If you take enough vitamin C, you'll have a bowel movement. And it does that, once again, by entering into the Krebs cycle and increasing the energy of the colon. So it's a very natural bowel movement.
I had a woman come in one time who hadn't had a bowel movement in a week. And she'd had a history of surgeries on her bowels. I was out of cleanses or anything. I was just out of everything. But I did hand her a bottle of food enzymes. And by morning, she'd had a bowel movement. So that's another piece of the whole situation in the bowels. Is you need to digest your food so that when it comes in there, it's broken down enough to be able to be worked and to be absorbed.
Right. When food leaves your stomach, it should be in the form of what they call chyme. It should be a liquid mass. It should spray into the small intestines in small liquid dosages, which allows for the best absorption. And because we don't take our time and chew, and because we have a lack of digested enzymes in our stomach, what happens is you get larger chunks of undigested food that enter into the small intestines, which bounce around and bruise the intestines, which is where the beginning of inflammatory bowel disorder begins, is a lack of good digestion.
And before we go there, I heard a man speaking, Dr. Mathers from New York State, and he said that 85% of cancers begin in the bowel. And that's one of the reasons that this is such a great concern to herbalists, is to keep this bowel clear. I heard Dr. I can't think of his real name. I think of him as Dr. Doo-Doo because that's his nickname. He's from Baltimore.
Right.
But he talks about the need for, how does he put it? He says a train going into a tunnel, you want it to have the same number of cars on the other side of the tunnel as it had going in.
Right.
He said every day you put a certain amount of food in and you want to see that same amount coming back out. You don't want to be losing cars inside the tunnel. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of his philosophy. Lots of bowel movements, very important. But again, it's because you putrefy in the bowel when you let it sit there that long at 98 degrees. Think about any food that you'd have in the refrigerator that you put out on the counter at 98 degrees for 2 or 3 days, and you have a putrefied mess. So we need to keep things moving through. And I think I've heard it said that about an hour after a meal, you should have a bowel movement for the meal that you ate the day before.
Mm-hmm.
So you're moving things through in about...
There should be 24 hours or less colon transit time on food, and a way to find out if your colon is functioning properly. And you can have 5 or 6 bowel movements a day and still not be eliminating properly if you aren't eating enough fiber and you have an inflammatory bowel condition. So just because you have IBS and you have 5 or 6 bowel movements a day doesn't mean that you're eliminating food properly. But I guess the easiest way to figure out what colon transit time is to eat a food that will dye your stool dark. Eat some beets for a meal. Sit down and eat beets. And when, dark reddish stool comes out, that's your colon transit time.
You can also use activated charcoal to mark your stool.
Years
ago, I had a doctor challenge me with that. He said, take 6 capsules of activated charcoal, and then you tell me, he said, how long it takes for that to be gone from your system.
Mm-hmm.
And it was 3 weeks before I quit seeing it.
Wow.
Yeah. See, that tells you that you do hold it for a long time sometimes, you know.
Yeah, there can be little pockets that absorb all types of nasty cruds in the bowel.
Mm-hmm.
One more safe long-term approach to bowel health is one that I guess I elaborated on or discovered or something like that, and that's enzymes on an empty stomach. Plant-based enzymes taken on an empty stomach help digest undigested fecal matter. They pass through the stomach into the intestines and increase the energy, plus help digest anything bad in there. And
Do you do a full spectrum of enzymes for that? You do, don't you? Proactozyme Plus?
I do the Proactozyme Plus, which is a full spectrum plant-based enzyme. And if you're going to do them on an empty stomach, you don't need to have hydrochloric acid in your formula. So no regular food enzymes would work. It has to be plant-based.
And that one does have protease in it, though. So
it does
break down protein matter that's there without having hydrochloric acid.
Right. And
so how many would you take if you were doing that sort of cleanse?
It depends on how constipated you are or how intense you want to cleanse. I find now that when I'm traveling and I tend to get a little bit constipated, I just fast for 2 or 3 hours and take two capsules every 30 minutes or so. Now, if I'm going to do a long fast, what I recommend a lot of my clients do that are starting a program is do a 3-day fast. Do 2 days of water or lemon maple syrup water fast, and once an hour, on the hour, take 2 capsules of Proactozyme Plus. And then on the 3rd day, get that good bacteria and minerals back in your system. 1 hour you do 1 ounce of colloidal minerals. The next hour you do 2 capsules of probiotics. And that's my enzyme cleanse, and I think that it's a great long-term solution. There's no addictive, energy-depleting, stimulating effects to it. It works on a very natural level.
So we're talking. I've already mentioned enzymes, too, to be taken with meals to make sure your food is broken down, but then you can do this extra enzyme cleanse as a beginning for a program, too, can't you, just to clean things up and get it so that things are moving.
Yeah, and I find that if you do an enzyme cleanse, you eliminate a lot of problems that you thought you were going to have a hard time with. I've seen people, I've seen type 2 diabetics that their average blood sugar is running 160, 170 in the morning time when they wake up. I've seen them after 3-day cleanse, their blood sugar drop to 90, which is perfect.
Wow.
And not have to put them on, you know, a dozen different supplements to help balance their blood sugar.
Now, I'm trying to think of what direction to go with this, but let's talk about hot and cold in the Chinese system of thinking. And we already have spoken about a hot situation, which is an inflamed condition in the bowel. We want to go into that more in depth. And the cold situation would be more like a constipation where there's no motion, there's no life, there's no movement. So the hard little impacted stool that's hard to produce and hard to get out. You know, I'll tell you the truth. I've heard about 2 or 3 heart attacks that have occurred on the toilet from people trying to strain out something like that.
Yeah, and if you have the hard, dry stools, you're going to have some inflammation involved, but it's going to be a secondary inflammation. So I guess the traditional way of finding out what condition your gut is in is by looking at the tongue. If your tongue is pale all over, then it's definitely a cold condition, and you need to warm the stomach up. If it's pale in the center but has a bright red tip and sides, then you're looking at a colon that has become so inflamed that it's used all of its energy and it's cooling down. So it actually needs to be warmed back up to cool down the inflammation.
Hmm. Okay.
And the pale tongue all the way across, a lot of older people have it. That's a lack of hydrochloric acid and digestive secretions. I find that a good PDA formula and some safflowers help correct that.
Yes, and there's a study that was done that showed that signs of aging are in direct correlation with reduction of hydrochloric acid in the stomach.
Absolutely.
That means that the number one drug in America, which is Nexium, Prilosec, that sort of thing, is actually encouraging aging because it reduces the hydrochloric acid in the stomach.
It really does. It depletes your natural stores. The weird thing that happens with your over-the-counter or prescription drugs like that is because they kill off all of the hydrochloric acid in the stomach, they force the body to dump all of it has in there, which depletes you even faster. So not only are you getting the lack of immediate digestion of foods, but after the digestion process starts, it dumps all the acid in there, which is just using up your stores for the next meal.
Right, so, and it actually discourages you from producing hydrochloric acid the next time around.
It does.
Yeah.
Now, some more commonly eaten foods that discourage your body from producing hydrochloric acid are wheat and dairy, because casein and gluten clog the spigots that pour hydrochloric acid into the stomach.
That's interesting. I was just going to bring up those two foods plus
which
sugar.
Which is I really love safflower for, is to clean those spigots out.
You know, safflower is also good with gout.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with swelling in the ankles, that type of arthritic condition down there. So that's interesting.
I think that it does that by helping digestion.
I think it
does. Gout is undigested protein.
Yeah, undigested protein. And then as you quit digesting, one of the biggest issues is going to be calcium deposition in the body because you can't break down the calcium either.
Mm-hmm.
So your calcium goes off, you start having arthritis, and you start putting on weight, and you start to look old and haggard when your digestion goes down.
And get kidney stones and gallstones and bone spurs.
Yeah, because your calcium is in the wrong place. Right.
Yeah, I had to take a biology class for massage school a couple of years ago. And in our biology book, which was the standard biology book that they use for pre-meds, it said that your hydrochloric acid production starts declining at the age of 30. By the time you're 40, you only have 3/4 of the hydrochloric acid you did when you were 30. 50, half, 60, a quarter, which means if you're 60 years old, you're only digesting a quarter of the food you did when you were 30, and that's if you were healthy to begin with.
Wow. Yeah, and then you start getting gray hair and looking old. Now, if you do have acid reflux, which I know is a very painful thing to have, what you want to do is pull the stomach down. Use your hands up underneath your sternum there and pull the stomach down and stretch the esophagus so that the hiatal valve at the top of the stomach can close. It's
mm-hmm.
like the lid on the top of the sewer is simply opening up because you've got everything all bunched up and folded up against it. So moving the stomach down helps to do that. And then taking enzymes with your meals and actually helping yourself to digest will help to improve that condition.
Yes, and I have an interesting theory about hiatal hernias that you're talking about. You know, you go to a doctor and he does an endoscopy or a laparoscopy and they don't find hiatal hernias. And my reaction to that is, well, do they just stick a tube down your throat? No. They give you a muscle relaxer and a sedative.
Which relaxes the hiatal valve. I never realized that. Good thinking, kid. Okay, now, let's go on back down. As the food leaves the stomach, it goes through another valve that checks whether it's chyme or not. And we already mentioned that undigested food going out into the small intestines is going to beat it up. Okay, now there's something else that beats up the small intestines big time.
Mm-hmm.
And then we end up with something called leaky gut. And I remember when I had chronic fatigue and I went back to my favorite MD up in Dublin. He had a nurse who studied the nutritional stuff. And she handed me an article on leaky gut. It was 2 pages long and she said, this article talks about every symptom you've got. You need to look it over. And I looked at the title of that thing, and I said, could you please make it something a little more elegant than leaky gut? That's awful. But what it is, in a nutshell, is that when the small intestines are irritated enough, the skin will stretch, and then larger particles of food drift through the not to. And then you end up with all these undigested food particles out in the bloodstream. The immune system comes along and takes pictures of these big chunks of food, takes it back to the brain, and the brain says, well, I guess we better kill everything that looks like that. And it turns out that not only have you mounted an attack against your food, but then it'll miss. Like in any war, there's always peripheral damage?
Mm-hmm.
What's the word I want? Collateral damage, right? And it turns out that like a milk particle floating out there in your bloodstream looks exactly like the cartilage in your knee. So your immune system goes out and starts to attack your knee. Hence, we have a situation where something like Aleve, ibuprofen, Motrin IB, and aspirin are all in the NSAID family, and they can cause this type of irritation. And most regular drugs will create this kind of thing too, especially antibiotics. But the painkillers that are designed for arthritis or that help with the immediate pain of arthritis actually then turn around and create a worse situation by encouraging damage to your joints through mm-hmm. this situation. So leaky gut can be very detrimental to the whole body. You want to say anything about that?
Yeah, I'd like to add that constipation will do the same thing. Think about it this way. If you don't change a baby's diaper, what happens?
Oh.
They get diaper rash,
and they
right?
get so mad and irritable and cranky.
Right. So you pull the diaper off, and, you know, you've left fecal matter in there too long, and they get diaper rash, which is red, swollen, inflamed skin. That's just from fecal matter being in there too long. Guess what? The intestines are mucous membranes, very similar to the skin. It's basically skin on the inside. Fecal matter left in there too long causes the same inflammation. As the cells become inflamed, they swell and spread apart, and you get that same leaky gut syndrome.
Well, and I think you can also get that from eating too much of the same three foods you mentioned, the sugar, wheat, and dairy. They're
yeah.
irritating to any area that they're up against. And at the same time, those are the three foods that feed yeast, which we'll get to in a minute, too.
Yes.
And they create mucus in the system, and you don't need strings of mucus in the bowel either. So those are foods to be avoided.
Right.
Okay.
Except for sprouted wheat. I want to emphasize that. It's the gluten in wheat that causes the majority of problems, and if you sprout your grains first, it takes away the majority of the gluten, and you don't have that problem. So a good Ezekiel bread or a Essene bread, I consider safe to eat.
Okay. When I had really serious reactions to wheat, I couldn't even do that. I had to have a wheat-free bread. So if you've got a serious condition, go with totally gluten-free first.
Right.
And then test it and see how you do with the other. Dr. Jensen, when I took a class from him one time, he said that everybody is allergic to wheat to one degree or another. And one of the things that wheat does is to lay down the cilia in the digestive system, and it stops the motion. So you'll end up with gassy, bloating, constipated situations when you are reacting to wheat. Okay?
Yep.
Okay, so NSAIDs, Aleve, Ibuprofen, Motrin IB, and Aspirin are all very detrimental. And this is an incidental. It's not really gut-related, except that it affects the kidneys as well. And I heard one doctor friend of mine, Dr. Quinlan here in Canal Winchester, told me one time that 75% of the dialysis in this country is because of that family of painkillers.
Yeah,
that
and
exciting?
I'd like to say that the kidneys do have an influence on the gut also. The body is a whole, and you can't mess with one part without messing with another.
That's true. Mm-hmm.
A mentor of mine, Phyllis Light, says that a lot of IBS actually starts in the kidneys. The kidneys aren't filtering solutes enough, and then so they reabsorb back into the liver, and the liver dumps them into the small intestines, and that's what causes a lot of the inflammation. So,
yeah, and I have always treated severe kidney problems by going to the gut first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's what came first, the chicken or the egg.
Yeah, because they are together in that they're both chimneys, they're both ways for the body to eliminate toxic waste. And the bowel, obviously, should be the main eliminator, but then second to that would be the kidneys. And the kidneys sort out the gunk in the blood.
Mm-hmm.
And then if it has to dump it, it goes back into the bowel again. And then after that comes the lungs and then the skin. And the skin is very closely tied in with both the bowel and the kidneys. So if you're having skin eruptions, you look at both of those places as well as the liver.
I did a consultation today on this, you know, good old country boy, and he had chronic sinus problems. And he said, you know, I don't know what it is, but every time I eat a piece of pizza, I just get really clogged up.
Well, I would too.
He looked at me so incredibly surprised when I put him on an intestinal cleanse and not an antihistamine of some sort.
and did you tell him to quit eating the pizza?
Yeah, I said, well, how about this? How about let's eliminate wheat and dairy from your diet for 3 weeks and get your intestines clean and see how your nose reacts? And he said, well, I don't get anything from my sinuses. And I said,
nope.
This is what I'll do. I'll give a money-back guarantee. If you follow my program and it doesn't clear up your sinuses, you'll get your money back for the consultation.
Mm-hmm.
He said, okay.
I got to tell you, that leads into something. When I was in France studying the aromatherapy, the teacher there helped us to make a suppository for the respiratory system. And it was to be delivered into the rectum.
Yeah.
You leave it there overnight, and that clears up the lungs. And, of course, this isn't a style of delivery that Americans favor much, so I really didn't bring that home to people. But I did get from him that there is a direct connection between the bowel and the lungs and the sinuses.
Sure.
that you can really literally heal the sinuses through cleaning up the gut.
Well, don't the Chinese consider the intestines and the lungs both to be metal elements? They're both protection elements.
That's interesting, yeah.
Yeah. So they you know, 5,000 years ago, drew a direct correlation between the two.
Yeah. And that's where enemas would help, too. You can do some cleansing in the bowel with enemas to also help with lungs and congestion.
Or colonics. Mm-hmm. Colonics work.
But generally, if you'll stay, you know, even in 25 years ago, how long ago has it been now? How long ago? 35 years ago when I was in college in a chorus, my choraling teacher knew about dairy and how it clogs you up. We would be fined if we were caught eating anything with dairy in it for 3 days before a concert, because he didn't want us all standing up there with vocal cords with snot dripped on him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's simply, you know, it's a well-known fact that dairy will produce mucus and plug you up. So stay the heck away from it. Asthma, which is chronic respiratory problems, you take those three foods away, that's half the battle right there. Take away the foods that produce the mucus.
Mm-hmm.
Sugar,
absolutely,
wheat, and dairy. Okay, now let's go on with the bowels. Okay, so leaky gut, anything more about that?
Okay, fixing leaky gut, I think we need to address that.
All right, let's do that, fixing leaky gut.
Soothing, calming, mucilaginic substances for the gut. Oatmeal, honey, okra,
aloe vera,
marshmallow, aloe vera. All these do to the gut what aloe vera does to a sunburn.
Did you say slippery elm?
I said slippery elm, yes.
Good, okay.
And so you can basically think of the gut as being sunburned, and you just do these mucilaginic things to reduce the inflammation.
That's a good way to think of it. Sunburned, yes. Flaxseed oil, I'll add that one too.
Flaxseed oil, and this is why. The cells of the gut are, according to Hugo Rodier, tolling. They're toxic, oxidized, inflamed, and lacking in energy. And cells have little doors on them, and these doors allow nutrients in and bad stuff out. And if the hinges are rusted on the doors from inflammation, just like oxygen oxidizes metal and causes rust, same thing happens in the intestines with inflammation, and your hinges get rusted and good stuff can't get in and bad stuff can't get out, and the cells start to weaken and die. And so by oiling up the hinges, you can help reduce that cellular inflammation.
Okay, let's talk about other inflammatory conditions in the bowel, like colitis.
Colitis, Crohn's, irritable bowel syndrome,
yeah.
All of these I lump into one big category.
I do too.
Inflammatory gut.
Okay.
And the soothing, calming herbs to reduce the inflammation are key here. Now, I also really recommend tart fruits at this time. If you're a meat eater, you need to go easy on the tart fruits that have seeds because they can irritate the gut even more. So I would normally recommend blueberries to reduce inflammation, but you kind of have to go easy on those. If you have an inflammatory bowel condition, you need to focus on things like pineapple, which is anti-inflammatory, and lemon, which is anti-inflammatory.
And those are both going to help to get you more alkalized, too.
Right, right. So reducing that inflammation and then helping the cells communicate better would be amino acids like L-glutamine.
L-glutamine. Yeah, I've just been discovering that for bowels. It's wonderful for healing up a leaky gut.
Yeah, for any cell that is damaged, L-glutamine is really great. L-glutamine combined with a little bit of whey protein in the mornings and a little bit of good fats, flaxseed oil or coconut oil, probably one of the most healing things for the bowels you can do.
There's another one. Kudzu is supposed to be very good for leaky gut as well.
Kudzu is great for leaky gut as well as being a prescription drug for alcoholism in Europe.
Now, this is interesting because kudzu will help with alcoholism, but what goes on in alcoholism? Of course you're going to have a leaky gut with alcoholism because you've irritated it so much.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably how it works.
Yeah. It does, and so the kudzu-St. John's wort combination I really like. The St. John's wort helps to re-innervate those nerves. Basically, after chronic inflammation in the gut, the nerves that tell that the brain tells the colon to start peristaltic action with become frayed, and the St. John's wort helps give those nerves energy to create regular peristaltic action. So kudzu, a combination of kudzu, St. John's wort is one of my favorites for any inflammatory bowel condition.
Also, for any inflammatory condition in the body, including arthritis, fibromyalgia, any of those things, noni juice helps to reduce the inflammation over time as well. So that's another one to consider for this as well.
And that's the high amounts of protease enzymes in there, which goes back to the enzyme cleanse I was talking about.
Exactly, exactly. So in other words, there are lots of creative ways you can get to a result here. And I remember when I had the leaky gut, I turned to this nurse and I said, how long will this take? And she said, oh, about a year. I don't think it took me a year. You know,
no.
if you focus on it, you can get this done much quicker. But you could actually have holes going on in your bowel, you know, from this kind of leaky gut. So
I guess
it
probably
take
the
time.
Most intense inflammatory gut syndrome would be either ulcerative colitis or Crohn's.
Mm-hmm.
And both of those, if the clients correct their diet, I don't see any reason why they should have to go more than 3 months with symptoms.
Mm-hmm. Another one would be to add a fiber that has flaxseed in it. Flaxseed is shaped like two little convex lenses put side by side, and it has a shape and a tendency, when it's hit with water, it becomes very mucilaginous, so it's a slippery little thing that can kind of get through anything.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes a great fiber to soothe a bowel that's been irritated. What is the situation? Diverticulitis. When you're told not to eat seeds or chunky things, this would be excellent with diverticulitis, which is another inflammatory condition.
Now, another really great herb that I think is overlooked for irritable bowel syndrome or any inflammatory condition is cat's claw.
Huh.
Cat's claw is great at reducing inflammation in the gut. It's got a slight mucilaginic effect as well as being a direct COX-3 anti-inflammatory. And it helps reinnervate the nerves, just like the St. John's wort does. Cat's claw is really amazing for those tough cases.
Yeah, and it would increase the white blood cell count. I've used it with leukemia. It's
mm-hmm.
been very effective for that. So it's going to help to boost the immune system at the same time.
Yeah, not only boost the immune system, but it helps to what I call modulate the immune system. So that crazy immune system that's attacking the gluten and casein proteins from the dairy and wheat, it helps the body recognize that that's not an enemy anymore.
Ah, okay. I like that. It's wonderful to get to know the personalities of these things, isn't it?
It really is. And I guess probably the last herb that I would look at for any inflammatory condition is yellow dock. I really like yellow dock as a gut anti-inflammatory. Plus, it's a very toning herb. It helps strengthen that muscle back. And it contains anthraquins, which have a slight laxative effect also, but not in a negative way.
Huh, okay.
And we know that yellow dock is extremely anti-inflammatory and reduces heat, because if you have a attack of acid reflux, you can take two capsules and break them open in 4 ounces of water and sip on it, and in 30 seconds it'll get rid of an acid reflux attack.
Yellow dock.
Yellow dock.
Good to know. Catnip and fennel is good for that sort of thing, too. It helps with children with colic as well. It
mm-hmm.
helps to relax the muscles around the reflux. What was I going to say? We've got two products. One's called Everybody's Formula, and the other one is Intestinal Soothe and Build, that are both designed to take care of this type of hot condition in the bowel. And I've recently had a real influx of clients with this sort of problem, many of whom have already got surgery scheduled to take out 1 to 2 feet of bowel. It's becoming very common around me here in Ohio. And every single one that's come to see me, within 2 or 3 days, their bowels relax, they're able to start having bowel movements that are easy, and all of the surgeries have been canceled.
Mm-hmm. Now, I think it's important to mention here probiotics.
Yes, this is a good thing to go to next. Okay.
With any inflammatory bowel situation, the balance of good bacteria to bad bacteria in the gut is thrown off, and that bad bacteria latches to the cell walls of the colon and creates even more inflammation. So instead of good bacteria being attached to bowel walls, the bad bacteria takes it over, and yeast starts growing and all types of crazy things. But
now you should have a pint and a half of white cheesy stuff in your gut. And if you don't have the good kind, that'll make space for the Candida albicans to take over and fill the space. But Candida albicans is greedy, and it's never happy with what it's gotten. It goes systemic, it's called. It moves out of the gut into other dark, warm, wet, hot spaces. Like
through this leaky gut.
Yeah, that's true. And it'll go with women. Right after you've had an antibiotic, you'll turn around 2 weeks later and have a vaginal yeast infection and be back at the doctor's for the Monistat. Okay, anytime you have any type of yeast infection anywhere else in the body, including athlete's foot, ringworm, yeast infections, you have an out-of-balance gut problem. You need to go get the probiotics back into the gut to balance it. And as an illustration of that, we had a fellow one time who couldn't sleep because his athlete's foot was so bad. You can imagine how awful that was. And what I did was give him colloidal silver to kill off the bad bacteria, the candida, throughout his system. It beats it back, kind of. It's like killing off the weeds in the garden, the big tall ones. And then you sow in the good little guys. And I gave him then some acidophilus or bifidophilus or something like that at the same time to re-sow that field, and within about 3 days, his athlete's foot had disappeared.
Yep, and I think that the candida spreading systemically really creates a host environment for other parasites. I consider candida to be a parasite, but a mild one, but there's some nasty ones out there, and I've worked with 3 separate cases of extreme mental disorders, psychosis and schizophrenia, that were nothing but parasites in the brain. And on all 3 cases, within 6 weeks of doing a good liver bowel cleanse and parasite cleanse, they went from being patients in a mental institution to being the most normal people you've ever met.
I love that. I had a lady one time who had a lung full of something. She went into the hospital. They thought she had pneumonia. And they gave her 11 days of an IV of a really strong antibiotic, and nothing was getting better. So they finally cultured her lung and found it was full of yeast.
Yeah.
You can literally fill up a lung with yeast.
Well, sure. I mean, if you can fill up the stomach and esophagus and have thrush in the back of the mouth,
yeah,
you can fill up anything with yeast.
Well, her lung was full, and the doctor sent her home and said that there was nothing they could do about it. They sent her home with an oxygen tank, and we used colloidal silver, again, to beat that back and then repopulate the gut with the acidophilus. And when she went back for her doctor's appointment 2 weeks later, she didn't need to take her oxygen with her, so the doctor wanted to know what had happened. And when they told her, she said, it turns out that she and I used to be in the same 4-H club. So she said, you tell Susan, I want to know what she knows. So we've started working together on a lot of clients. And this is the way we bridge into the medical world. But they had nothing for yeast.
No,
and
they don't.
Her solution was just oxygen. That's all she could do with it.
You know, everybody in their kitchen has one of the best solutions for yeast, and that's garlic. Garlic is a wonderful antifungal, antibacterial. I use high-potency garlic for lots of bad yeasty cases, especially like you were talking about the lungs.
Mm-hmm.
Garlic's one of the few things that will actually kill off parasites and yeast in the lungs. And if you don't think it goes through the lungs, eat some garlic and see if your breath doesn't stink.
Right. Yeah, you can immediately clear yourself up. But in the best way to take garlic, I've read, is just to peel a clove of fresh garlic, bite down hard on it, and breathe that for 15 minutes, and then chew it up and eat it, because you've got it at a point where the allicin is being released, which is the active ingredient.
And good luck.
Yeah. Don't expect very many friends to get very close to you. I heard a man speak one time for about 3 hours on how to put probiotics back into the system.
Mm-hmm.
And he recommended starting with L-Reuteri, which is a Nature Sunshine product that's chewable.
Right.
An amazing product for really severe cases that are difficult to repopulate. He described it as sort of the bulldozer that goes in and clears the campground, and then you're going to start putting in the campers later. And then you come in with Bifidophilus and Acidophilus, and then you follow that with the Probiotics 11, which gives you several strains.
Right.
He said that was the best way to really do the job if you need to. And I want to say on the L-Reuteri, we've had babies who have a chronic diarrhea, could not get it stopped any other way. As soon as we gave them L-Reuteri, it quit.
Right. And the L-Reuteri is so incredibly strong that you don't need that much of it. Your average tablet of L-Reuteri only has 100 million active bacteria. Whereas
is that all?
Acidophilus, yeah, 100 million active bacteria, and the acidophilus-bifidophilus combination that we use most often has 11 billion.
Wow.
And the Elruri is stronger with 100 million than Acetophilus and Bifidophilus is with 11 billion.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really good. Also, the fermented foods are extremely important when you're talking about repopulating the gut. If you want to repopulate the gut 10 times faster, take your probiotics with fermented foods. I have a friend that's done a lot of studying on fermented foods, and she's a fourth-generation herbalist, really brilliant. And she says that you can take probiotics and kill the bacteria. You can warm them up and kill them, swallow them and eat fermented food with them, and it will bring them back to life and make them multiply 10 times faster than just taking probiotics by themselves.
So this would be anything with vinegar in it?
Is that fermented? As long as it's not added vinegar.
Okay.
It would be things like sauerkraut, which is just water and cabbage that's naturally fermented. It would be things like homemade, cultured kefir and yogurt, preferably with goat milk or low-fat milk.
And he said homemade. I want to reiterate that. When you buy a yogurt in the store, it's most likely been pasteurized after it's been made, so you don't have the live culture that you're needing.
Right. So get a starter kit and make your own.
It's real easy to do.
Yep.
You just take some culture out of the last batch, put it into warmed milk, and I would recommend you do it with goat's milk because it's more easily digested anyway. And then you leave that in little containers on a heating pad overnight, and they've digested all the dairy or all the milk by morning, and you have yogurt. It's real easy to do.
Now, here's some interesting information on yeast and bacteria in the gut. Organic chicken, organic free-range chicken, the fat on that is actually antibacterial. So making a broth out of organic chicken and adding some onion and garlic to it makes it one of the best antibacterial sick man soups that there are.
Well, I've always made chicken soup for sick people.
Yes,
but
sure.
I didn't know it was antibacterial, too.
Organic chicken,
wow.
The fat off of it is antibacterial.
Hey, you're just full of good stuff.
I try. What I do is I find foods that I really like to eat, and then I research them and hope that they're actually beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out that chicken soup is.
Mm-hmm.
So not just chicken soup for the soul, chicken soup for the gut.
Okay, I got a couple of little things here, and oh my gosh, we're using up the time tonight. Diarrhea is a liver flush. If you're having a problem with diarrhea, activated charcoal will stop it in its tracks. Take about six of them, and that'll absorb the toxins and stop it. And I've had good success also with a tablespoon of cider vinegar in warm water to stop nausea every time, and it will also help with diarrhea in balancing the pH throughout the intestinal system.
And what's the nausea from that apple cider vinegar helps? Low hydrochloric acid.
Vinegar balances the pH in the body. Uh-huh.
It lowers the pH in the body, making it more pH in the stomach, making it more acidic, and taking away the nausea.
Uh-huh.
I work with a lot of cancer patients that get that pale tongue because they're not digesting their foods, and they get chronically nauseous. And taking hydrochloric acid stops that nausea in its tracks.
Yeah, and it's worked on every type of nausea I've ever run into. It's never failed me. So that's something to consider. I want to say this, too. When we heard Dr. Rodier talking in his class on healing, and he talked about the underlying cause of all illness being inflammation, one of the really astounding facts out of his class was that 95% of the serotonin found in the body is actually in the gut.
Yeah, well, it's 95% of all neurotransmitters.
Which means
so,
that this area is extremely important to your nervous system and to your whole communication system within the body.
Right. Your happy drugs, your sad drugs, all of these are produced in the gut. If you have a bad gut, if it's leaky, you're going to be depressed. You're going to not sleep well. And then you boost that on the fact that the liver is not breaking down these faulty neurotransmitters and you know, you're getting not only the depression, but even in guys, you're getting chronic everyday PMS from an excess of hormones and neurotransmitters from the liver.
Being delivered into the gut?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay. Now, appendicitis is an inflammation in a certain region, and it happens to be right about where the small intestine links up to the large intestine. I've read in some books that is a case of a teenager's diet, basically. It's sure. just crud in the system that isn't moving through fast enough that would create that kind of infection because of food that's been pooled and rotted.
Mm-hmm.
So keep your bowels moving if you want to avoid that. We have to mention polyps and cancer and parasites, too, before we get off here. So you want to start in on polyps?
Polyps are normally a result of inflamed gut combined with some type of bacteria or parasite, and just the same stuff we've been talking about. Garlic, mucilaginic herbs, enzymes with your food. You know, I don't think polyps are anything special.
Okay, and they, of course, are noted as the precursor to cancer in the gut by the medical profession, so they're always looking for polyps.
Right.
I firmly believe that cancer begins in the gut, and if you are not moving things through, you're going to have a toxic overload that has to go somewhere, and that's
right.
when your body starts to create tumors somewhere to tuck the toxins away.
Well, cancer is an inflammatory disorder, and body-wide inflammation begins in the gut. So diabetes, high blood pressure, cancer, all of these are inflammatory and are caused by the gut. The typical syndrome X, the American syndrome,
mm-hmm.
is gut-related.
Okay, and then let's give a two-minute parasite talk here. Parasites will occur when you have garbage laying around. And when the gut isn't moving the way it should, you're going to have, it's like, you could kill the flies off or you could take the garbage out, you know?
Yeah, that's what I tell people. Flies are attracted to piles of garbage. They didn't cause the garbage to be there. They're just doing their job. You know, don't blame the garbage. If you want to get rid of bugs in your house, you don't leave garbage and food laying out and spray. You get rid of the garbage and food and the bugs leave. Same thing with parasites. You have to change the biological terrain.
And then you can do some things that will kill them off, one of which is black walnut hulls.
Mm-hmm.
Happens to also be very high in iodine, so it's going to feed your thyroid at the same time.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons why it's a great antiparasitic is the iodine is antiparasitic, plus there's a chemical in black walnut hulls called jugolone, which is antifungal and
I want to say, while we're on the subject of black walnut hulls, many times I've heard of people going to the doctor after they've been taking something with black walnut hulls, and the doctor gets all upset about the fact that the tissue in the colon is no longer pink, but it's dark brown.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you think about the baskets in your home that are dyed with black walnut hulls,
mm-hmm.
it is a dye, of course. And
sure.
there's absolutely nothing wrong with your bowel being that color if you've been eating black walnut.
And
no
just
problem.
Because you stopped black walnuts the day before you did your colonoscopy doesn't mean your bowel is going to change color. I made some black walnut tincture up this year and forgot to put gloves on when I first started handling them, and my hands were stained for a week and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Your gut will be, too.
Yeah, and it's not a problem, so don't let anybody tell you it is. Okay, parasites can actually be a big issue, you know, if you let them get out of hand. And a tapeworm, for example, can be 27 to 28 feet long, which is the length of, if you stretched everything out between your mouth and your rectum, you would have 27 feet of extended tube, you know. So a tapeworm can be the full length of that.
Sure.
And they can do obnoxious things like come out of your nose to get to your food. In India, I've heard of them being coaxed out with bowls of milk, and the person's lying on their side, and the tapeworm can be coaxed out the nose, and then they wind it up on a stick.
Yes,
yeah,
that's
really
actually
pretty gross
not
stuff.
Just in India. A friend of mine was telling me the other day that she saw that as a kid happen here in America.
Uh-huh. And I heard of one where a pregnant woman had stopped eating sugar to help her baby along, and found herself staring at a piece of chocolate cake in her lap, and the tapeworm came out and made her decision for her. So they grabbed hold of it and pulled it on out. But if you break them, they will grow a new head, I'm told. So you want to get the whole thing. And, of course, we're grossed out by this. But it used to be, back in the 1800s, they would sell a diet pill in the apothecary shops that were simply tapeworm eggs. Having a tapeworm makes you skinnier.
Wow.
Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Well, it gets worse.
Disgusting.
I had a student in one of my classes one time, when I told that story, she raised her hand and had to be heard, so I stopped the class and let her talk, and she said that she had bought recently a popular brand of diet pill and had left it in the windowsill for a couple of weeks before she opened it, and out crawled all these little worms. So they're still selling us parasites as weight loss products. Be careful.
Wow.
Isn't that scary?
Yeah.
Okay, but if you should run into something like that, black walnut hulls, pawpaw is also very good at killing off parasites. And if you are like me and you garden all summer and you're bare feet, it's not a bad idea to do a parasite cleanse at least once a year in the fall. Also, if you have animals, you need to put black walnut hulls on their food too, and you can pick up parasites from them as well. So just because we live in the United States doesn't mean we're parasite-free.
Yeah, it's an undiagnosed epidemic in the United States, I believe.
Probably so. And some of these fellows have faces and mouths, and, you know, you can put them in jars and make pets out of them if you're not.
Oh.
I heard of one lady who found, her job was in the hospital, she would sweep out the lung before they put the life support system in, and her vacuum got caught one evening, so she pulled it back out, and there's a thumb-sized parasite stuck in there with a face on it that she put into a jar and kept on the desk for a while, but that was even in a lung. So parasites, as you said, can go into the brain, they can go into the lungs.
And if you're listening and have parasites and decide you want to capture one and it has a face and you put it in a jar, please do not send me pictures of that.
But speaking of sending things, do you want to give out your email address?
Yes, my email address is tmeasley, E-A-S-L-E-Y, at hotmail.com. Feel free to email me any questions you have.
And mine is N Gingrich, G-I-N-G-E-R-I-C-H, at Cincy, C-I-N-C-I, .rr.com. Thomas and I are doing a series of Dr. Mom, Dr. Dad classes that are sponsored by originated by the Tree of Light Educational Group. And we have one scheduled for April the 14th in Birmingham. Mm-hmm. And please email one of us if you'd like to join us in that class. I'm working on one in Southern Ohio, and we have another one on May 5th up in Fort Wayne. So any of those, you're welcome to join us for the class. We have a blast all day long. Oh, two other products, since we have just a tiny bit more time. A daily fiber is recommended. We've got Nature's 3. We've got Ultimate Green Zone with fiber in it. We've got Low Clo, which is a fiber drink. Daily, you need a fiber product. That would be for general health. And I would take a probiotic daily, too, just to keep that balance under control. And then we didn't mention GastroHealth, which is a product that has what it takes to kill off the high pylori bacteria, which is what creates ulcers. And I'm trying to remember who told me this. I believe it was Clell Fowles who mentioned that GastroHealth is working on certain types of migraine headaches that are because of the bacteria in the bowel as well.
Yeah, especially when you have that real pale tongue, a lack of hydrochloric acid,
right.
You're very prone to the H. pylori bacteria.
So anything about the high pylori bacteria, you can take care of that with GastroHealth. It's a wonderful product. There's another one called Bowel Cleanse that has, help me out here.
It's got a little bit of activated charcoal, a little Cascara sagrada in there. It's good at absorbing toxins off of the walls of the bowel.
Bentonite clay was what I was trying to say, too.
Yeah.
And that sucks up the toxins, and it will suck up 40 times its weight in toxins. This is my favorite one for diverticulitis, which is a situation of an infection caught down in a pocket.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to be able to suck those pockets clean. So that's a very gentle one that has worked great on all my diverticulitis people.
Yep.
Anything else you can think of?
I think we pretty much covered the beginning stages of the intestines.
And I just want to say that it's one of the things that Dr. Rodier said about the gut is he said that he firmly believes in female intuition or gut consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
He said that we have a consciousness about our gut. It is not just a sewage system. There's a nerve that runs from the large intestine up to the brain, and we would think that most of the communication would be coming down from the brain to the gut, but 95% of that communication goes up from the gut to the brain.
From the gut to the brain, correct. And the same chemicals produced by our brain cells to create thought are produced in every cell of our body.
Huh.
So intuition, gut feelings are a primitive part of the body thinking.
And as we keep our gut in a healthy state, we're going to have more gut-level stuff that we can trust.
Sure.
Okay, I'm going to sign off tonight. That was great. Thank you, Thomas.
Thank you.
And thank you all for listening, and we'll talk to you in 2 weeks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.